welcome to Turn the Page, the official podcast of the Syosset Public Library.
Okay. Hi, this is Jessica with
Stacy,
and we're here on Turn the Page podcast with Dante Bosco. How are you doing?
I'm doing well.
So Dante, you are?
You're everything. You're like a quadruple, triple, everything threat.
I don't know about all that. I'm just an artist in LA, just trying to stay creative.
I think it's pretty amazing. Your career has spanned
decades.
I just kind of have to throw this out there. So when you played Rufio and Hook, your character's demise was one of the three that kind of ruined my childhood in the way that, like, I thought, but not in a bad way, but like, I thought I was going to get stabbed my entire childhood.
I know there's a certain generation out there, obviously your generation, it was like people would tell me for years and still to this day, like the death of Rufio is like the first traumatic moment of their life.
It was devastating. And so it was Rufio, it was Inigo Montoya, and I saw Princess Bride in the same theater that I saw Hook in, which was this beautiful theater that used to be up the road from the library that had like a balcony and... Stacy's looking at me because she grew up in this area and she's unaware that this place existed.
Well, I grew up like the town over, but I was like, there's no movie theater now.
It was the fancy movie theater, but now it's a gym. But when Atreyu stabbed Gamorg in the Neverending Story, so I had this crazy fear of being stabbed my entire childhood, but the character was so beloved to me.
That's a pretty good threesome.
It's terrible. I've seen a meme where it was like something like, you know, therapist, tell me where your troubles began, and then there's a picture of Atreyu trying to get his horse out of the swamp of sadness.
That got me. Oh.
But anyway, so then like years later, I became a fan of Avatar: The Last Airbender.
Yeah.
And was extremely excited to see that you were involved in that as well. And then when Stacy and I saw you were coming out with a memoir, which is called
From Rufio to Zuko,
we kind of conspired that we were going to do the best we could to get you on our podcast. So thank you for doing this.
You made it happen. Actually, I'm just the book doesn't come out until November 4th, and you're pretty much one of the first interviews that I'm doing.
So exciting.
We're gonna actually have this be our Halloween special. So that way we can stay current with right before the book comes out. But I feel like with Halloween, I feel like it's a very good time to air this episode because people cosplay as
a lot of your characters.
So yeah, they do. It's commonplace now with the onset of Comic-Con being such a buzzword and part of pop culture these days. But I get to see a lot of people's kind of renditions of Hook, of Rufio, and of Prince Zuko, and of Jake Long.
Yes, Jake Long, American Dragon. That's pretty it's pretty amazing.
So to see people dressed up as your characters, such an, you know, it feels like more of an honor than anything. And it's been cool. I mean, ever since back in the day, people were dressing up before we called it cosplay, just, you know, for Halloween as Rufio. And I'd always get bombarded with pictures in the mail. And then when social media hit and people send stuff to my Tumblr and that kind of stuff, it's pretty cool.
That's awesome.
My sister-in-law just, she wanted, because she's a huge Homestuck fan, and they kind of had like a Homestuck, which is a huge phenomenon of a webcomic. They had a character devoted to you in that?
Yeah. I mean, I'm a Homestuck.
You are a Homestuck.
Yeah. Shout out to all the Homestuck trash out there. I'm with you. Actually, Homestuck was my first kind of foray into social media. There's this girl, so I, you know, when social media hit, I mean, it was so brand new, right? And no one knew what we were doing. And I mean, I'm of the generation before that, so I was like kind of reticent to even, you know, be less private about my life. Mm-hmm. And some, you know, I was like, okay, I'm gonna get a Twitter. So I got a Twitter, right? And then very first day on Twitter, a girl named Jean Bean, or her tag name was Jean Bean, was like, you need to get a Tumblr. And I was like, what's Tumblr? Like, I just got on Twitter, you know? And she was like, just going back and forth with me on Twitter, like, believe me, get on Tumblr. You'll have 1,000 followers tonight, I promise. So I was like, all right, cool. I got on Tumblr. She was right. Like, over 1,000 followers. Like, I literally post on Tumblr, like, yo, I'm Dante. Like, it's up on Tumblr. And so my inbox got filled up with all these pictures of trolls and Rufio with horns. And I'm like, what the hell is this? And then they're like, you have to read Homestuck. And so on Tumblr, I started live blogging me reading this really super weird, odd webcomic called Homestuck, which I guess was one of the early, you know, one of the very first or new kind of like, you know, viral webcomics. And it took, for, I mean, I didn't know what I was getting myself into. It literally kept going on and new updates. I mean, over 8,000 pages. It ruined my reading for like 2.5 years because I
could see that.
I'm not big enough to read a lot of things at the same time. Anyhow, the crazy thing was my Tumblr grew to over 250,000 people following me read Homestuck, which was crazy. And so that was my first foray into social media. Cut to years later, I became a consultant for the company, and Andrew, who's the creator of Homestuck, and helped them kind of put out their video game Hive Swap. And you know, it's been an adventure. It continues to be an adventure.
So do you want to talk a little bit about your book? And Stacey had a quick question.
Which I have several questions.
She does have several questions.
I'm ready for this.
okay, let's hear it.
So how does it feel? So how this is a yeah,
you
go ahead.
Touched upon it before about how it feels being part of well-known and beloved franchises like Hook or Avatar. And I mean, you even voice, you're a narrator and you voice a character in Star Wars stuff. Like, how does it feel to be part of those big names? Is it intimidating, exciting, crazy?
It's all that, you know, it's great. I mean, like Star Wars, like doing Star Wars, right? So like everybody, like most people, Star Wars was my first fandom as a child. Mm-hmm. And so to voice an original character, you know, just have a little piece of the Star Wars world was amazing to be a part of and to still be a part of. And then I've gone back and I'm doing, you know, narrations for their online stuff. And so to be a part of like the Star Wars family is pretty, just my inner child smiles every time I think I'm a part of that. Being able to create new franchises and new IP and intellectual properties like Avatar, and to see something grow into what it became, I had no expectations of what that was going to be. And it's just like, it really blew my mind, because it was just, you know, it was another cartoon that we were doing, and you know, as an actor, we just kind of work and you just work, and you never know what has longer lasting impact, or you know. Mm-hmm. And that became a phenomenal hit. I mean, I remember running into Jason Isaacs at Sundance one year in the snow, and Jason, which you know a lot of us know from tons of stuff, mm-hmm. including Lucius Malfoy in Harry Potter. I'm a big Harry Potter fan.
So are we.
General
Zhao in the show, and he's awesome. And he was like, Dante, man, like that cartoon we did. He's like, yeah. It's like, what the? I was like, you know, like,
yeah.
Because it became this phenomenal hit, we both look at each other like, who the hell knew that was going to become what it became? And when it's all happening, and this is even when that was happening, it was like before social media, mm-hmm. really.
Yes.
You know, it starts growing and a little buzz by little buzz going on, and it's not kids coming up to me, it's adults coming up to me and talking about the show. And I was shooting Take the Lead, and one of the other guys on the set was like, I kept leaving the show to do some voiceover work on the show. And they're like, what show are you on? And I'm like, oh, it's a cartoon for Nickelodeon. It's called Avatar Last Airbender. And it's like, what? And he starts flipping out. And he's like, who are you? I'm like, the fire dude, you know, like, Zuko. And he's like, you're Prince Zuko? It's like, and it's just crazy, like what it became. And you get that feeling like, oh my God, am I a part of like a new Star Wars?
Well, now this comes full circle because Mark Hamill played Zuko's father, right?
Yes. The story of meeting Mark Hamill is, I mean, it's it that at that story it believes in the book.
We can't wait to read it.
I saw you could
pre-order it, and I was like, "Ooh, there's two editions. What? I need both."
You know, there's characters on both sides. I mean, the publishing house, like, they wanted to do two different covers, and I was like, "That's cool.
It's really cool."
Yeah, so I mean, you're just doing. Yeah, you're in part of the Star Wars. And you're like, "Who am I?" I'm like, for a second, you're like, "Am I? What am I? Am I Han Solo? What's going on?" That's kind of a crazy thing. But then when it comes to Hook. Hook is a whole other thing because Hook is Peter Pan. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? And what Peter Pan is, it's like not even a franchise. It's a fairy tale that has been around longer than anyone on the planet has been alive, you know, and will be around longer than when we're all gone. And so we all grew up with, you know, the Peter Pan, the stage play, the Disney movie, like we know Peter Pan, Captain Hook. And then people have always been sending pictures and when they go to Disneyland or Halloween and groups of people dressing as this fairy tale, right?
Yeah.
Peter Pan,
yeah.
Tinkerbell, Crocodile. Like,
I say that as I've been sudden, Captain Hook before.
She has.
Yeah, really?
Yeah, we will sometimes dress up like coworkers for Halloween, and my boss likes doing like literary type characters, so we ended up doing Disney villains and princesses, and I was like, I'm going to be Captain Hook.
And she was awesome.
Thank you.
Classic. That's a classic. But then all these years later, that now me, like this Filipino kid, has infiltrated a fairy tale, like a little, you know?
Yeah.
Now people just, right next to all these characters, you can just have this little punk Trihawk kid next to the group. And everyone's like, yeah, it's just a part of the folklore. It's like, how do you become a part of a fairy tale? That's weird. That to me, I'm always like, that means anything's possible.
Well, I think that's awesome because I was looking at an interview you've done before where you talk about how that character playing Rufio like is a first like Asian American like person.
Representation. Yeah.
And how it's changed from that was, you know, over 25 years ago to now, because you were talking about the director of Crazy Rich Asians, and that's a whole cast, and the industry's changing and being more welcoming and inclusive of all these people. It's great that you inspired that.
Yeah. I mean, no one sets out to do anything like that. It just kind of happens, I guess, historically. When John Chu was talking about me in certain ways where he's talking about representation and his first feeling of representation in Hollywood and the possibility was Rufio in the movie. Since then we became really good friends and, you know, very, very supportive and part of the conversations, which became Crazy Rich Asians and all the things that we're all doing, you know, individually in the future. So, you know, it's just, I'm proud to be, you know, looked at as, I don't know, pioneer of some sort, but, you know, I still feel like a kid. I'm still a lost boy.
I think we all, we just Stacey just had me watch something when you were doing a boy band.
The Try Guys music challenge.
That was hilarious.
It was awesome.
Because I was looking at your Wikipedia page of stuff, and I was like, wait, he did part of a Try Guys thing? Because I watched them and I've followed them since BuzzFeed. And I was just like, oh my God, I need to see this. And that you had some of the other actors. I was like, oh, this is the best. I was like, I hope they win. Spoiler alert, people, they win. But I was just like.
But the Try Guys are great. I mean, I met the Try Guys because, Eugene dressed up as Rufio for Halloween.
I didn't know that.
Google it.
I'm going to. Stacy's Googling it right now.
He's one of the best Rufio cosplays of all time. I mean, he's fabulous anyway, but it was a pretty fabulous Rufio.
So that was, that was super fun.
Whoa.
And she's enjoying this picture right now.
No, that's That's intense. That's a good.
That is a good costume. Wow.
Kudos to you, Eugene. Yeah.
So how did it come that you decided you were going to write this book? Where did did you decide? Did somebody come to you and ask you to write a memoir?
No, I did not decide to write this book. What happened was Daniel Lisi, who's one of the publisher,
who's been amazing in connecting us, by the way. I have to give a shout out to him because I think I kind of was like, hey, can we do this? And then I'm like, can we? And then he's like, oh, okay, we'll do this. So shout out to him.
And Daniel created, amongst other things, we've collaborated in the past, but he started his publishing house, Not a Cult Media, which is an amazing indie publishing house. And he approached me about doing a book. And at first I thought, I was like, you want me to do a poetry book? Because I've released a poetry book and I've been pretty, prominent in the poetry scene.
You do slam poetry, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm one of the co-founders of one of the biggest poetry venues in the country called DPL, the Poetry Lounge.
Cool, cool.
And nice. And so I thought, I was like, do you want me to do another poetry book? He goes, no, I want your story, your life story. And I'm like, what? Like, I'm a young veteran. I'm a veteran of the industry over 30 years, but I'm like, I'm still pretty young to write like a memoirs book or an autobiography or memoirs. I'm like, I can't do it. I'm still working, Daniel. Like, I can't tell all these stories. I'm still going to meet with these people. But he was really adamant about, no, like, we really want a perspective of Hollywood from an Asian American perspective. And like, you're the guy we all grew up with, so we want your story. And mm-hmm. I was like, that sounds pretty cool. And so I said, yeah. And, of course you say, yeah. And then you sit down to write your story of your life and you're like, so freaked out, missing all kinds of deadlines. It's hard to confront your own life. To look at your stuff, because when you're in the industry, this industry, but like everybody in life, it's like, but especially here in Hollywood, it's like, if you're here for over a decade or so, and I've been here over 3 decades now, we all have our own true Hollywood story,
Yeah.
And there's a lot of stuff that you want to do some fanfare and tell some cool stories about all the projects people want to hear about. But then there's also darker sides of the industry. Over the years that has affected me personally and my family, and my whole impetus of doing it was like trying to offer some sort of blueprint to the next generation of actors coming to Hollywood, mm-hmm. To learn from your mistakes, especially people of color like myself. And it's like me and my family came not knowing anybody. And so, which is really exciting and fun, but also you tend to make a lot of mistakes. And so hopefully the next generation, you're always going to make mistakes, but maybe you can learn from a few of my mistakes.
Yeah. So to try to prevent that from rehappening, but like, as you said, you were kind of like a pioneer for this.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's also like to my family, cause my story is, my family story. We're all actors, we're all artists, and we all came together and everybody's successful in their own right. And really it's a shared, a lot of it's a shared experience.
I think also just what you were talking about social media before, the experience is just, would you say different?
As far as
just being an actor, like, do you feel that there's just, I mean, obviously you got on social media and then everyone's like, get on Tumblr. But do you think like documenting your daily life is more, there's more demand of that, obviously, like now with social media, people can tweet out to their fans,
Yeah. I mean, the world's changed. I mean, the whole paradigm, it's been a paradigm shift in the world, altogether. And it's just been seen more, cause at least for me in my industry, where there's a distinct line between the traditional media age and what's going on in the digital media age. And, there's pros and cons to everything. Mm-hmm. And it's still really the beginning. Like, it's still the beginning of this whole thing. Think about the, you know, it's only been 10, less been less than 15 years of like real, even 10 years of like real social media happening. So if you think about like, think about the first 10 years of television or the first 10 years of film, like that's the beginning. And so we don't even fully understand what it is, what's happening, what's going on, what we're doing, and we're all filling it out. I had a deal with a lot of years with Maker Studios, which is they created the first MCN multi-channel network, and they're a big and part of this whole new age of digital media, and they got acquired by Disney. One of the co-founders, Ron Erickson, is my producing partner now, The Machine, a new company. So we're all kind of students of what's happening, and continue to create media. It is different. What you realize is we thought it was all the same thing, but there are actually different forms of entertainment.
Yeah.
Whether it be traditional media and storytelling, and then this more authentic blogging and vlogging of people's lives, and really following individuals for certain everyone has their reasons of why someone's life resonates with them, you know, and it blows your mind. I mean, someone can do a movie for millions of dollars, yet some kid can do a video in his room for nothing, and that video can have more impact than that multi-million dollar movie.
Yeah.
And it's happening every day. And so we don't even know what all that means or where it's going. It's just, we're all students right now and trying to just continuing to create media, and you know how that intermingles with the finances of media, which is companies and corporations and brands, you know. So it's interesting. It's the wild, wild west.
it's interesting because like as librarians, I mean, obviously people think of librarians and they're like, oh, books, you check out books, but you shush people, which I don't know. Stacey's laughing
because she's making a face of like, oh,
I spent 16 years in the children's room, and we tried not to shush people because the last thing you want is for children not to feel welcome in their library these days when they have so many other places they could go. Just my thought.
Well, in full disclosure, I've gotten kicked out of a few libraries in my life.
For being too loud?
For being too loud. And
I'm so sorry. On behalf of librarians and libraries everywhere, we apologize.
But also, we were there to go study with the girls after school. So I don't know if we were really trying to library. We were just really trying to socialize.
Well, no, that happens today. Like,
I think that's the thing, though. We're like kind of morphing into community centers, you know, and you have to embrace the changes in media and the way things are changing.
I just got my library card back.
Yeah.
And I hadn't had a library card in, at least a few decades, maybe 20 years.
Welcome back to library land.
I know. I went to my local library here in I live in Beverly Hills at the Beverly Hills Library. I did have a book overdue about 18 years,
which
I had to pay a fine on. That book was From Here to Eternity.
Okay.
I remember checking the book out, and I left it in San Francisco when I was shooting an episode of, I think, Nash Bridges. And I apologized profusely. I think I said I had to buy the book. I think I owed like $18.
Yeah, it'll usually be something like that. The most, at least to my knowledge, of libraries do is they'll charge you to the max of what the book costs.
I mean, literally, they're like, you still have a book checked out. And I was like,
oh.
Sometimes they'll still do
but
it.
But I knew I did. I was like,
well,
I know.
You own up to it, so.
And
thank you.
Thank you for coming back in spite of that.
Having
back
fun.
In the library.
Do you have a preference
between the covers that you saw? Did you have any input on the covers?
I mean, I got to look at them and talk about them. Yeah, I mean, they're brilliant. I mean, the second I saw them, I'm like, what am I going to say? That's gorgeous. They're great.
But to me, it looks great, more great like covers, artwork, I mean, than a book cover.
Yeah, it really is, I think, for sure.
I mean, it's art. It's like I told them I need these blown up so I can have them somewhere in my office or
seriously.
Something.
Seriously.
They both look so cool. As far as Preferences, I can't, you know, it's hard to...
How do you choose between Rufio and Zuko? They're both so great in different ways.
I mean, yeah, and they're very, and they're also very similar in certain ways, you know? They both have a redemptive arc. I don't know. I mean, to me, for me as an actor and as a filmmaker, it's like, you know, fans watch your work and it means something to them because they see that project in their life at a certain time and it means something to them, and whether that, you know, that continues to live on for them or not, which is great. But for me as an actor and a filmmaker, it's like the movie or the television show is like just a piece of the memory. You know what I'm saying? It's like, that's, you know, I shot Hook when I was 15 for like 8 months, and leading up to that shoot and then everything after the shoot and the filmmaking, it's like, it really represents my, you know, my childhood or my adolescence. Like, remember being 15, like, think about, like, there's a timelessness for 15 for me with that character forever. And it was such a big year in my life for a lot, not just for Hook and Rufio, but other personal reasons. So, I mean, it's your life. And then, it's just when you look at your projects, it's like they become not just the art you created, but it becomes like
a part
photo
of you.
Albums of your, yeah, photo albums of your life. So,
and in a way, I guess, you know, like Rufio being a lost boy was kind of frozen in time. Like that character in that time period is frozen.
Yeah. It's crazy. You know, just the other day, and I wrote a blog about it a while ago, but it continues to happen now. I think the blog was like, you know, when you're officially a part of pop culture, when, you know, when people start tattooing you on their body, <You're> like, right. And so someone just sent me another email like 2 days ago when they tattooed like a big Rufio tattoo, my 15-year-old mug on their leg, the upper thigh,
oh,
the
wow.
whole thigh. And people have gotten like this stuff.
Yeah. That's, I mean, dedication.
Zuko's cool because it's a character I voice, and it's just a nice piece of art. Mike and Brian, the creators, that they created these great characters, and I'm honored to be a part of it. And then when it's like a rendition of your adolescent face on someone's body, guy or girl. I mean, guys have sent me, girls have sent me. It's just like, okay, I'm with you.
Like you, literally, you are with them.
Permanent.
I'm permanent. Keep that spot clean for me if you can.
No, but that's pretty cool. Because like another thing I was watching is when you did the hardcore tabletop with Rooster Teeth and playing Monopoly. Oh my! I was dying watching that because I'm a huge Monopoly fan. I don't play like my friends do, who get like real vindictive at everything. I'm like, I'm playing for my Monopolies. This is what I want this game.
And God, you're just straight up player. But that's what I screwed up. Greg went straight into the crazy rules.
Yeah.
And what happened was I had not played Monopoly for years before that. Since then, I played Monopoly a lot because now I'm back in on my Monopoly game.
Back in the game.
And I can't wait. If I can get back next year, I have a whole nother. I see my mistakes.
You now know what you're gonna change. But they made your piece. They made it a Rufio piece, which is pretty cool. Did you get to keep that?
No, I did not. It's probably somewhere in the Achievement Hunters Hall of Fame somewhere.
Oh.
I think that's like, but that's another thing. Like talking about just how social media and pop culture, watching celebrities and people playing board games. It's kind of nice.
It's become huge.
And as a gamer, I think it's great. It's always, you know, you always want to see people you enjoy enjoying things you enjoy.
people that you look up to or follow.
And
it's a new time. Who would have thought? Who would have thought?
I mean, my husband and I always talk about how, you know, like you used to kind of like, I mean, not you, but like
the general you
who used to play tabletop and Dungeons and Dragons, like that used to be kind of like the thing you used to not tell people at school. And, you know, you'd hide in your basement and hope nobody
now,
else,
like,
hope the jocks didn't find out as the John Hughes movies would suggest. And now everybody's, you know, jumping on board with tabletop and role playing and there's it's pretty, in that way I would say it's a pretty cool way to use social media.
Totally. I've done a few D&D campaigns recently.
What's your character?
I always play wizards, and I always I always play these characters like that are designed to annoy everybody else in my party.
No. Oh, trust me.
I based a character once on Brittany from Daria.
Nice.
Yes, a wizard. That was like super exciting. And
I usually do like wizard or ranger type stuff. I usually always end up being like half elf something because I'm like, this is fun. But I've played recently with friends, and that was like the worst mistake ever, because like half the people took it seriously. The other half were like, we're going to cause drama and trouble everywhere. I was like, oh, my God.
I have twins, and we always talk about how, like, you know, playing make-believe is pre-D&D, and we have a theory that one of them is going to be, like, you know, the hardcore rules, lawful good, and the other one is going to be the one who's just going to go in there and mess with everybody. He's like, I'm not going to go into the woods,
Game
Master, I'm just going to go into the bar and mess with people. mess with the NPCs.
I'm going to open these crypts.
I'm going to slap the guy in the face.
Yeah. Right,
what happened?
What kind of...
Now we're all fighting. What's going on?
That's what one of my friends did during our campaign, and I was like, oh my God, like, I can't. But it's fun.
Can't we talk this out?
What kind of characters do you like to play?
I mean, I'm usually the guy with the big sword.
You know? Nice.
Damage guy, I like that. I mean, actually the last one I did a little dragon bread, just so I had a little magic. I like to switch it up a little bit, but you know, I like to have a lot of damage. I like to go and fight.
And I like to make things go boom, which is why I like being a wizard.
I'll play more stuff because recently I've been playing where I would just like, I'll just heal everybody. Keep me in the back.
Going good.
Yeah, that's...
You know what's crazy? When we were talking about, I mean, you guys are obviously gamers, and I kind of like re-got into gaming again through creating a project based around League of Legends, and I became a big League of Legends player. And
that's huge.
But you know, all these other games, you know, they're all based on Dungeons and Dragons.
It's true.
All the crit, everything, damage, all the weapon upgrades. It's like, oh my God, it's all it's like it all goes back to D&D. And I just remember like making, you know, these characters with, I mean, like we played D&D when younger. I wasn't like really into it. It was like our nerdy friend down the block, Ruben San Juan, was always a dungeon master getting us to play this. And we're sitting around with college old paper trying to create these characters. And I'm like, what are we doing? Just how long can we just play the game? Like, we gotta roll forever for everything. We gotta roll for every cloak, every dagger. Yeah, I'm like, Ruben, dude, I'm over this. Like, let's just go and start fighting. But then cut to like years later, like every video game that everyone plays now is based on the rules of D&D.
Yeah.
Like crit strikes, crit fails. It's like all D&D. It's crazy.
What's the?
It blew my mind.
There's,
I was like, wow.
It's crazy. Just like the span of gaming. Have you ever voiced a video game character? Except for you've voiced Zuko, I guess, in the Avatar series.
Yeah, no,
he's
I've done video games.
Yes. Okay.
I've done the video games. Yeah, I did like a ton. I was like a character in a game called Skate 1, Skate 2 early on, and I did like I've done characters. It said I did a character in Final Fantasy, one of the Final Fantasies, which I'm sure.
There's so many of them.
I mean, I've done some Tom Clancy stuff. I'm around the video game world. I'll pop up. My voice will pop up in the darndest places sometimes.
But it's cool though, because I was going to say, like, I know you did Mortal Kombat.
Yeah, I did Mortal Kombat. Yeah, I mean, I play League of Legends, so hopefully sooner or later I'll get the voice of League of Legends character. That'd be cool.
It's always amazing. We were talking about Mark Hamill, how he voiced Fire Lord
Joker.
Yeah, yes. So when I found out that Mark Hamill voiced the Joker, and this is embarrassing, I definitely shed a few tears.
He's the all time. He's one of the all time. I mean, he's like up there with fans, like. it's like there's Jack Nicholson, there's Heath Ledger, and there's Mark Hamill.
And
I mean, those are the Jokers.
Because it's crazy, because he played such, you know, this like this iconic wide-eyed, you know, young boy coming into his powers in Star Wars, and then he plays somebody like the Joker, and I don't know why that just like it really like it hit a nerve, but like in a good way. It's like, oh, he's, you know, he's thriving and he's still creating things that are so
he plays my dad.
Yes, yeah, and he did, and I definitely that was pretty great. His character his character became more prominent in like the later seasons, if I remember correctly.
Well, the whole thing when I first met Mark, it was like, you know, I was told like, oh, I didn't even know it was going to be him. It's like the director, Andrea Romano's legendary voice acting director. She's now retired. She's one of the best. I was just in the booth with her, and she was like, oh, Mark's going to come and play your dad. I was like, okay. Mark who? And then it's just like the door opens, and like I always tell this story in a comical way because just my memory of it is like, you know, it was a dark, rainy night in Burbank. You know, the room that we usually do everybody with, but this episode is just, I'm just by myself, and then the door opens, and it's like, you know, like smoke rolls into the room, and there's like a guy dressed in all black, and I'm like, that's Mark Hamill. And he just kind of floats in the room, and just, we do the scene, and if you know the scene I'm talking about, when we meet you, it's really, it's like the Agni Kai between like Zuko and Ozai, where Zuko gets scarred. And when you find out where this scar that's been on his face the whole time, how it comes, and it's his father scarring him and with fire. And you just hear, you know, these lines like, father, no, father. And what you realize, what I realized in the moment, is I'm doing the Vader Skywalker scene with Mark Hamill.
Yeah.
Oh.
And I'm playing Luke, and he's playing Vader. And it's just like, what? It's like the one of the most surreal moments of my life.
Mind blown.
I mean, we do the whole scene, mind blown, and then he just kind of, it's over, and then he just kind of, you know, floats out of the room on the
the cloud, the mist,
the cloud, the mist in the room, and leaves, and I'm just sat there. I just sat in a seat, like just flabbergasted and spent, like, oh my God, I just did the Vader Skywalker game with Mark Hamill. It's crazy. I mean, only in Hollywood. Like, how the hell does that work?
It seems like it's like almost a small world at times, like how you end up interacting and like meeting other celebrities or doing voiceover work with like people that you might not necessarily expect, but it's pretty cool.
It's a great world, man. I mean, it's not something I ever thought I was. I didn't come to town to voice act. It just kind of happened, and it was amazing.
And you're beloved for
a lot
a lot of things. And
but I don't know where you were about to go, but I'm going to interrupt you. Oh,
go for it.
No, because I think it's interesting because you played in Avatar: The Last Bender, but then you also played a role in Avatar: The Legend of Korra. So you
I got to play my grandson, General Iroh the Second, which is amazing because you know, I mean, Mike and Brian, the creators, are, you know, they know their fan base, and they love to offer up Easter eggs around and you know, Zuko's such a popular character, and I became just a popular person in the fandom. To come back and to voice my grandson was pretty hilarious because I was like, what are we doing? Like, does the voice transfer to another generation? Sometimes it does, Dante. Okay, cool.
This is what happens.
This is what happened. But also, it was, you know, we're honoring Mako, who passed away when we were shooting, we're taping.
I'm glad you brought that up because I was just about to ask about him. Was it the second season?
Yeah, it was like, ironically, it was like the time. I don't know how the seasons all work out because we did it, you know. How they seasoned it later on was, I don't know. It was different. They did it in books, and we did it over several years. But it was when, you know, they'd send Uncle Iroh to jail, and, like, Zuko kind of, like, was, you know, kind of out of it. Like, so it was a time. So basically, honoring Mako and being like, you know, the namesake of Mako, General Iroh, Uncle Iroh, was very touching to me, and I love doing it. So what you understand about Mako, the actor, is he's played my uncle or my father several times in my career. I think 3 or 4 times.
Oh, wow.
At least 3. Yeah. So he's known me since I was 12. And he was someone in my life over the years that I can always go back to. And I would see on set and mm-hmm. talk about Hollywood and talk about, you know, Asians in Hollywood and where we are, where we got to go to. He really taught me a lot of lessons. He was Uncle Iroh to me in life. I mean, he started East West Players, which is the longest running person of color theater company in America. We're a theater company I've done plays in, I've written plays in. And he was about, you know, trying to empower the next generation, make it better for them than it was for his generation. And I directly, you know, benefited from that.
He does talk. So, I've seen interviews where he does talk about, you know, when he came into acting as an Asian actor, and he's been in so many things.
He's one of the most prolific actors in town. And in his passing, he taught me more lessons. The things I'm doing now in Asian American film is directly related to learning lessons from Mako, my Uncle Iroh, about. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not all about you. It's also about creating opportunity for the next generation, telling stories. And so
it's like you're continuing a legacy.
Yeah, exactly.
Well,
cheers to Uncle Iroh.
Yeah.
Yes. Pour one out. A tea of he was a big tea drinker, I believe.
Like, I have water tea here.
Yeah. But yes. Dante, we want to thank you so much. Yes, yes. Thank you so much for talking to us.
It's been great.
We here at Syosset Library, we love stories, we love pop culture, we love Star Wars, we have media, and we are very
to the next generation.
And we're very excited to have your book here on our shelves, and especially your voice on our podcast.
Yes.
Well, I'm excited too. And it hasn't been announced yet, but when the book comes out November 4th, I'm doing Barnes & Noble, The Grove here in Los Angeles.
Oh, wow.
And then I'm flying to New York. And
are you going to Barnes & Noble there?
Barnes & Noble Union Square.
Oh,
hear that, listeners?
I might be there. What about you, Stacey?
November 8th. So if you guys
I could do that. I could totally do that until December. It's fine.
Oh, but spoiler alert: Stacey's having a baby.
You're pregnant.
Yeah. Spoiler.
Oh wow! Cheers! Congratulations.
And
you can't see because we're on a voice call.
And by the way, Avatar was one of the first TV shows that I marathoned with my husband when we first started dating. So yes, thank you.
Well, you did that when I first started dating my husband. I was like, "Have you ever seen Hook? It's a great movie. It's got a great cast."
And just the other day, there was a preview for Hook on something that my little boy saw, and they asked, they're like, oh, can we see that? And then I went back to myself being like, are they going to be afraid of getting stabbed if I show them this movie?
It's a great movie.
It is a great movie. It really is.
I loved it. Like, that movie makes me cry. For numerous reasons, one of them being the scene where
all the feels,
you die.
All the feels.
All the feels.
And then Robin Williams.
Well, no, I like him. He's great. That's not why I cried. I think one of the first times I cried during it was when they're like playing with his face.
Yes.
It's like, there you are, Peter. And I'm like, oh my God.
Yo, that scene, when they shot that scene, it was that powerful. On the set, seeing it happen, sometimes when you shoot stuff, you just, you know, when you catch that moment, like the air in the room changes.
Oh, wow.
Like literally everyone there is like the air in the room changes. And you know, as a filmmaker, I'm about to go direct my first film.
Oh, that's congratulations.
Oh, thank you. I'm actually, after this, I'm heading to the table read. I'm flying to Manila on Monday.
Oh, wow.
Just shoot Manila, and we finished it up in San Francisco. It's called The Fabulous Filipino Brothers.
Oh, great.
I wrote it with my brothers, for my brothers, me and my brothers. So, but like, when you're, you know, you're trying to reach for these moments and greatness or whatever, you just, you try to, you know, bring back your past experiences of when you felt, you know, the air change, and you're trying to create the soil for that to happen every day on the set.
Well, this is why I said before when we first started the podcast, you're like quadruple bajillion threat, because look at everything that you've done and continue to
do. Just, you know, influencing us with the feels.
All the feels.
All the feels.
I don't know. You know, we just tried. I don't know.
Does anybody ever feel
sometimes
like
you're a jack of all trades? And that's not really deemed as something great all the time. But sometimes you're just an artist trying to stay creative and express yourself. It all is coming from the same place. I mean, it's really just, you know, trying to be creative and tell stories.
And I think,
I think you're very successful with it.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, is you guys are librarians. I don't know, my assistant, what is it, used to be a librarian.
Oh, really?
We're talking about books. Yeah. And so we talk about like books all the time, and then I just read a book called Sapiens.
Okay.
Fascinating book. But, you know, in the whole thing of like mankind and whatever we think we are, you know, whether you're whatever, science or religion or whatever. But what it all comes down to is story. Like, story is the thing that has shaped everything. It all comes down to story.
Yeah.
And it's just, what stories do we, you know, may believe in, from religion, even science, even our personal things, who we think we are, is just a story that we choose to believe in. And so, I mean, you guys are librarians. Like, that's it. Like, that, nothing is actually real. It's all just stories. And the power of what that is crazy. And sometimes we forget. We forget that everything we think we are and everything we think happened is actually just a story.
I think that's true.
It's very true.
And I think I was going to say before, just in the vein of just, I guess, like being a lost boy, or, you know, like still playing tabletop or still caring about stories and watching cartoons, no matter how old you are. I know that I don't ever feel like I'm an adult. No matter how old I am, I'm like, okay, when you do this, when you cross this milestone, you're an adult now. And I just never feel it. And
you just do sometimes adult-like things.
You have to. It's because you have to. But yeah, I think.
It's always good to keep that spark, that like part of childlike joy and wonder and imagination in the world.
I just never feel grown up. I don't know. I think that's
it. But I mean, make it inspirational, Jessica.
What, you know, I'm a lost boy. What am I going to say? Never grow up.
No.
Be bangarang.
Yes. Thank you so much for once again. And good luck on everything.
Yes.
And we will be airing this episode when our listeners are listening to it. It will be October 31st.
Yeah. And we'll tweet at you and the publication.
And all of the social media stuff.
All the social media.
All right.
And maybe I'll see you at Union Square.
I am going to be seeing how we can do that. Yes.
I'll just take off work. I don't care.
Sounds like
it can happen.
All right. All right, Dante, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Cheers, you guys.
Bye. Bye.
It's time to close this chapter of Turn the Page. Join us for the next episode.